It's quite impressive. It's sending you a message. I'm gonna make your hairy dreams come true.
My beard.
You know you want it. Now, baby, it's time to get on it. Girl, don't be afraid, 'cause I am bringing my beard to you.
G'day and welcome to the Drunken Beersman Podcast. I'm your host, Drunkle Dan, and thanks for joining me on this fine week. This week's been pretty bloody quiet. No JD again, of course. Who knows when that's coming back around. Thinking about having good old Ghostus Stark back on in the next couple of weeks, but in the meantime, it's just boring old me. Made a decision this week to give a bit of an update on how my life's been, because I'm sure you're all riveted. So, this week I had an interesting conversation with my children coming home from school one day. Because I live out of town, I got a good, good 20 minutes conversation with them every sort of morning and afternoon. And I sat down and I tried to explain the idea of a pen and paper RPG to them. You know, Dungeons and Dragons, Pathfinder, that sort of like. Specifically, Dungeons and Dragons and the White Wolf series of games. And by the time I started, pretty much as soon as they got in the car at the school gate, and then from then until we got home, I still hadn't managed to get through the idea of exactly how to play a game like that without a control or a video screen, and I realised I had failed as a parent. So to that end, I've officially gone out and spent about $150 on the basic D&D 5th edition series of games, which I absolutely fucking love, to introduce my children to the wonderful world of RPGs that don't involve a console or a PC of some sort. So might be another podcast in it coming out very, very soon, I'm thinking. Might even be a supplemental of the Drunken Beersman. The Drunken Beersman look at Dungeons and Dragons, why the fuck not? So we've got a pretty big show on this week, pretty decent show, I should say. We're going to have a bit of a look at beards in ancient Egypt, as promised last episode, because I'm sure everybody's absolutely fucking waiting for that. And in the meantime, I also found a very lovely little beer, which I'm going to go into very, very soon. So without further ado, it is that time again. Wait for it.
But the search for the holy ale.
Yes, that's right. It's time for a search for the holy ale. We haven't done this in a long time. It sort of went by the wayside, but I thought it was rather appropriate tonight. I was in the local bottle just early this afternoon after a lovely little day out about with the chillins and the missus, and I come across some Cooper's Extra Strong Vintage Ale. Now, I've never seen this before in my life. This is actually last year's brew. Apparently that's something they do once a year. So the geese behind it all, at least on the label, goes, Cooper's Vintage has been brewed with choice malts and an extended top formation to provide a strong, flavoursome ale. Stored under cellar conditions, the rich and full flavour of Cooper's Vintage will become more complex over an extended period. According to Dr. Tim Cooper, who's the chief brewer over at Cooper's there at the moment, this naturally conditioned ale experiences interactions between the robust malt, hop, and yeast characters to exhibit an intriguing journey of flavour developed over a period of 5 years. This grand ale should be savoured in moderation. Moderation being the appropriate word, coming in at 7.5%, or about 2.1 standard drinks over the stub. She's a pretty fucking meaty little fucking drop. I did a bit of research into the ale itself, and this is what I managed to come up with. Once again, this is all ripped straight from their website. It's that time of year again where the warmth of summer has receded and the cold days of winter are upon us. Mercifully, this is also the time when our beer enthusiasts can anticipate the release of a new Cooper's Vintage Ale, to provide a source of inner warmth to endure the chill of the season. The philosophy of the brewing team in approaching a new vintage is to ensure that an extra strong ale is brewed with intense flavours. The faithful Cooper's Ale yeast, which derives back from 1910, reliably produces delicious esters and fruity flavours during an extended fermentation. As expected, the enticing ruby hue and generous foam is enhanced by the combination of a premium Australian malted two-row barley, crystal malt and malted wheat. The hop charge of this year's vintage comprises mostly hops with both bittering and aromatic characteristics. The hops were added to the brew during the kettle boil and afterwards and following fermentation. It's all over the fucking place. Apparently in a sequence designed to get the best results. And it just sort of goes on and on and on. Now look, Cooper's is, they're one of the biggest, if not the biggest brand in Australia, or to come out of Australia. Make Foster's look like a fucking bathtub gin fucking operation. So I thought I'd go into a bit of the history of this great bearded Thomas Cooper, who was the creator of the brew back in 1862. Apparently writing to his brother in 1864, he had this to say: "There are some half dozen breweries beside ours in and about Adelaide, but they all use a good deal of sugar and so on for brewing. But we only use molten hops, consequently ours being pure. The doctors recommend it to all their patients." Now, from what I can tell, the impetuous behind this beer being brewed is, at the time in Australia, all you could get was imported beers, colonial beers, so a lot of IPA-style sort of brews. In 1862, South Australia, which is where they're based, was actually only about 26 years old, and although there were a number of well-established breweries, most settlers preferred to drink imported beer from the mother country rather than the local brew. So Thomas Cooper saw the opportunity to create a beer that was free from the peculiar flavour of colonial ales, and he would introduce an all-natural beer from the very best ingredients. By 1987, he died, and his sons, John, Christopher, Samuel, and Stanley, assumed control of the family business. By the turn of the 1900s, even its competitors regarded Cooper's Brewery as a brewer of distinction, and following their hotel debut in 1905, an increasing number of hotels sold Cooper products over the following decades. So, during the 1900s, there was, you know, wars and everything else. However, many successful generations of the Cooper family continued to grow the business by brewing fine ales, stouts and lagers in the natural, traditional way. As word spread and demand grew, Cooper products became available nationally and first exported to India and then New Guinea in 1939. By the late 60s, through concerns about long-term survival of naturally conditioned ales, Cooper's invested heavily in lager production. And under managing director Bill Cooper, interstate and overseas sales of ales and stout grew through the 80s, representing 50% of beer production by 1990. Up until, it continued to grow until just last year, in fact, sales had actually topped 69.7 million litres of beer, for 2 years ago. And it has also got a massive range of home brewing equipment. In fact, it is the largest home brew equipment producer in the world. It's a wholly owned, or not wholly owned, but primarily Australian owned company that includes some pretty crazy beers. They also own, let's see what else they got here. They've got a few international beers in their stable that they also look at. So what we've got, Carlsberg. We've got Dr. Tim, Sapporo. What else we got here? Carlsberg, Kronenbourg, Mythos, Signature Pilsner. So, you know, they even produce an alcohol-free offering called Holsten, which you can buy at the local shops here, which is quite delightful. So, that's a bit of the background history on Coopers themselves. I mean, they are one of the biggest fucking brands in the world, and I've heard I'm actually quite partial to their extra best stout, which is quite well. But they do all the standard ones and a few little craft brews here and there. And look, they're a really good drop, and their homebrew cans are actually one of the most popular and one of the easiest to fucking use. So there you go. But due to beer itself, and this is what we're looking at. So like I said, it's Cooper's Extra Strong Vintage Ale. They release a new one every single year. So on the front of the bottle, like I said, I've got last year's model, the 2014. I'll keep my eye out for the 2015, I think, as it goes along. So starting with the label, we've got, you know, five options we go with, which is don't drink and design, fun to peel off, quality printing, goes with my say from better than beer, and I'm gonna rate this one fun to peel off. It's decent printing, pretty basic and standard, but there you have it. I don't mind the label at all, to be honest with you. Now with the colour, she's a rather dark, sediment-filled beast. I'd probably say my tawny brunette out of the five options of not even for St. Patrick's Day, spin straw into gold, mine for amber or copper, or night night black. Clarity, you definitely need a lighthouse. She's thick and she's hazy, brother. You can't see through it at all. So definitely need a lighthouse there. Now the head I once poured is she's pretty decent. She's pretty decent. It gives Ivory run for its money, I'd say. It's a bit darker for head. But at the end of the day, she sinks down quite nicely, settles down on a nice little creamy sort of little texture there. Now the aroma. Ooh. Ooh. I'd say that's Dozer Rising out of the five options of Skunk in a Bottle. What else we got there? Skunk in a Bottle, Dozer Rising, that pine freshness, rich enough for Fireside, more complex than Love Itself. Yeah, I'd say Dozer Rising. All right, now the fun bit, the mouthfeel. She's definitely very rich. I'll give it that. It's massively rich, actually. You get very complex, I'd say. You get a lot of hops, get a lot of yeast. She's something else. I'd call that more complex than Love Itself. As of the flavour, we've got five options once again. Might as well be light beer, sweet like your old malt shop, came out of the toaster, hoppingly bitter, more than 31 flavours. Now, I'm going to go hoppingly bitter. She's a very bitter beer, which you'd expect from the 7.5% ABV. That's what I'm going to give it. Now, with the finish, I'm going to have to say she lingers. Definitely a lingerer. Not a malingerer, just a lingerer. It is nice. Look, I tell you what, I had pumped a couple of these on my way home and sat down just before and pumped off a third. And look, I got to say, I do quite fucking enjoy it. She's a bit to get used to. Like, that first one goes down like a fucking sack of bricks on a fucking mineshaft. But once you get past that first one, she's actually not too bad. I don't mind it at all. Probably couldn't sit down and have a session on them. I think that's pretty well standard for any sort of, you know, higher percentage alcohol beer. But I'm telling you now, if you can track yourself down a six pack, it's definitely worth to go and have one. And it'd be especially good, like coming into winter, especially with you know, a nice hearty stew or something of that sort of fashion. It's quite fucking nice. I'm a fan. I'm an absolute fan. I've got to give this fucker an A minus to an A. Fuck it. You know what? An A. It's good for someone who doesn't quite like the porters or the stouts, but it's enough to keep a porter or a stout fan happy in the meantime anyway. So that's our search for the Holy Ale this week. It is rather fucking enjoyable. Look, like I said, that's Cooper's Extra Strong Vintage Ale. They release one every single year. I'm not quite sure if they export them or not, but if you do happen to see one, go out and get yourself one right now. So, like I said, this week, and as I promised last week, we're going to be having a little bit of a look at the beard in ancient Egypt. I am a fan of ancient Egypt. Like, I've always been fascinated by the pharaohs and the various dynasties of that period. And one of the things I think that we can all sort of know about ancient Egypt, if you know nothing else, is the pharaohs always rocked that sweet little chin beard. So apparently, I found this really good article on TerraEgypt.net. all about the beards of ancient Egypt. So I thought I'd share that with you right now and sort of fill in what I can, where I can, as far as, you know, the assumed knowledge it reckons you might have. So it goes thusly. Facial hair, specifically beards, is a more fascinating topic than many may realise. It is an enigma in later periods with considerable religious connotations. Facial hair does have an uneven history in Egypt, though perhaps not so much as in our modern world. Clearly during the pre-dynastic period, which is about 5,500 BC to 3100 BC, as well as during the formative early years of historic Egypt, beards were favoured by men. Duh. We see this in the images of the Namar palette, for example. That's a bunch of shit from the pre-dynastic period, obviously. We find officials and rulers of the old kingdom, such as Prince Rahotep, depicted with mustaches and full beards. They're widely shown, and of course, full beards are widely shown on mummy masks of the first intermediate period and the middle kingdom, such as that of the 12th dynasty. Now, the first intermediate period was 2100 to 1900-ish BC. The article continues. Nevertheless, in the early dynastic period, shaving seems to have become fashionable, at least amongst the noble elements of society. Later, shaving spread to the rest of the population, which had a rather understandable tendency to follow the customs of higher society. In fact, it became a mark of poor social status not to shave, except when in mourning or about to depart on an expedition abroad. So, the early shaving implements appear to have been sharp stone blades usually set in a wooden handle. In later periods, fine copper razors, and from the Middle Kingdom onwards, bronze trapezium-shaped razors were used. Now, the Middle Kingdom onwards was 2100 to 1690 BC, just for those playing at home. This evidently also produced some of the world's first members of the barber profession, who visited the home of the aristocracy. Aristocracy? Yeah, aristocracy, that's right. You can tell I've had a couple. But attended to the common customers out of doors. We find a depiction of a barber in tomb scenes such as that of Huzahet on the West Bank at Thebes, which is what you call Luxor these days. Also located in the Tomb of Nobles, where military recruits are receiving haircuts and from ancient Egyptian literature. The scene in the Tomb of Userhet depicts the barber attending to his clients who sit on a bench beneath the shade of a spreading sycamore fig, while other young men wait in a row seated on folding chairs and tripods. Yet there remains a mystery associated with beards, evident in art and religion. Despite the apparent low esteem of facial hair during life, the beard was considered to be a divine attribute of the gods, whose closely plaited beards were like lapis lazuli. In accordance with this religious formula, the pharaohs would express his status as a living god by wearing a false beard secured by a cord on certain occasions. Such beards were usually wider towards the bottom, as in the triad statues of Menkaure. So prevalent was this type of beard in formal royal portraiture that even Queen Hatshepsut was depicted of wearing a false beard. And she really sort of brought it into vogue. In death, the kings were frequently portrayed wearing the divine Osirid form of the beard, which was a long narrow beard of several strands plaited like a pigtail with the end jutting forward. This, you're most likely, most obvious one to point this out is on the gold death mark of King Tutankhamun, the one that broke, or has been broken in the past, that caused such a big hoopla fucking last year. Even deceased non-royal men were shown with short, tough-like beards. However, this is not a clear-cut indication, for the dead king was not always presented with this type of beard. Such beards in ancient Egyptian art, regardless of their context, always appear to represent divine nature, though certainly not all male gods wore such beards. Given the divine nature of beards, one question that begs answering is why they lost popularity early in Egyptian history. Certain types of beards resembling those of the gods and false beards of the living king may have been prohibited, or simply not worn out of reverence. However, more likely is the reason that ancient Egyptians' obsession with order, neatness and hygiene. Throughout ancient Egyptian history, the poorest of the poor appeared to have continued wearing beards. It is even likely that some others wore them regularly. So there was an apparently legal restrictions against all beers. Also, and very interestingly, outside of a religious context, beers within Egyptian art usually indicate the foreign nature of an individual. The enemies of ancient Egypt are frequently depicted with beards. Given the ancient Egyptians' disdain for foreigners, this may explain some of the popularity of shaving, as well as the reason why officials sometimes did not shave when travelling abroad. To sum things up, beards become a very important aspect of ancient Egyptian art, providing us with clues as to the nature of an individual, whether royal or common, foreign or Egyptian, god or human, and depending on the type of beard, whether the king is depicted dead or alive. So, if you want to look into that a bit more, I mean, by all means, go nuts. You can find that article at touregypt.net. They've got a whole range of articles on a lot of different things, which I found quite interesting. I also found this other article, which I'll put in the show notes because it's a little bit long to read, but basically covers the same sort of ground, which is a little bit more filling information. Sort of basic. So that's our look on beards in ancient Egypt, which I thought was quite interesting. I think next week, just to mix it up a little bit, I might have a look at something in the realm of booze. Keep up with this drunken beardsman little shtick that I do. So I might pick a spirit, or I might even pick a style of beer. Might have a bit of a tasting session and talk about the history of, say, vodka or scotch or bourbon in a little bit more history than what we've covered in the past year and a half or so. I thought it was quite interesting, and I'm sort of trying to find some way to keep it a little bit exciting for everybody. But of course, before we wrap up, it's time for that great segment that we do every single week, where we have a look at one man's story about his beard. That's right, it's time for a Beards and Fakers story. So this week's story comes from Greg Wesson. He hails out of London in the UK. You can find him on Twitter at GregWTravels. And this is what he had to say. Deciding to grow a beard was driven by three separate desires. Firstly, I was taking a sabbatical from work, and every day is that when a man is bored, a surefire way to battle the boredom is to grow a beard. Suddenly my days were filled with pre, during and post shower rituals that I never bothered with the thinning hair on my head. Time spent online and in specialist barber stores perusing, learning and testing various oils, creams and butters. Hours could pass as I silently sat simply stroking my beard. The beard is the time sink of a first order. The second reason was because I've always had a youthful face. Now this had served me well in my 20s and 30s, as I could always pass away as a younger version of myself. But now as I enter my 40s, halfway through my damn 40s, I found I wanted to look no more like a boy. I wanted to look like a man. Men have beards. The solution to looking older was obvious. Grow a beard! Finally, as a man in my 40s, a single man in my 40s, I wanted to make sure I was attractive to the women as possible. The area I live in, London, is slowly becoming hipsterfied, with brew pubs and ironic faux American diners popping up elsewhere. As the hipster women flooded into the area, I needed to fit into their ethos. So I grew a beard to be more hipster. I'm currently wearing a t-shirt, ironically, as well. Probably paying $30 for a bowl of fucking cereal. Sorry, editorialized, I can't help it. And thus, the beard was born. But putting aside the reasons I grew the beard, I'm keeping it for another reason altogether. It's cool. And I look awesome in it. So that was Greg Wesson's story. Very typical story, I think. And thing one, I think that the scientists are doing this peak beard bullshit are failing to take into account when they go, you know, the beard is dead, the beard is dead. Yep, you know, hipsters and the hipster movement may have certainly helped propagate a few more face manes than what there was 5, 10, 15 years ago. But I'll tell you one thing, it is certainly going to be keeping a base population of bearded men around for a very long fucking time. So, there you go. That's our Beards and Focus story for this week. Next week, we're going to have a another beer product review. I think we've got some Bushrangers brew that I will be reviewing. I'll get Mr. JD to be ringing in again. Look, I know if you've been on the website, it hasn't really been updated in a fair while. I am working on that. I am, at the moment, at least a one-man show. Without the visual artist skills of Mr. JD, so keep looking the keep checking the website, people. It is going to be updated. Our concept beer competition is going very well. We're getting the name out there quite a lot. We're getting quite a few entries, but it is still not too late. We have until the end of the month. We're about halfway through the competition at the moment, so jump on the Instagram, at the Drunken Beardsman. You can jump on the Twitter at Drunk Beardsman. And retweet, repost the photo, tag some friends, and make sure you use that hashtag TDBConceptComp to get yourself a nice little special edition package that you're never going to get anywhere else. You can find me on the social media at The Drunkle Dan. You can find Mr. JD on the social media at JD Whiskey Beard. You can find us on the social media. Just look for The Drunken Beardsman. You'll find us one way or another. And until next week, ladies and gentlemen, on the same drunk channel at the same bearded time, you stay bearded and beautiful. Peace.
Just put your hand right there. There's magic in the air. Oh, darling, yeah, you really want to clutch it for reasons you can't understand. You want it so much, so baby, just reach out your hand. Touch me in the beard. Go ahead and touch me in the beard. I want you to hold it, stroke it, put your hand inside and say goodbye to all your fears. Just close your eyes and touch me in the beard.
This has been a production of RVSR Media. I'm your host, Drunkle Dan, and thank you once again for joining us. Just a quick reminder, ladies and gentlemen, that the Drunken Beardsman do not promote unsafe drinking, and of course, always suggest that you drink in moderation. And especially no underage drinking. Wait till you're older. Until you're old enough, it's very, very bad. And of course, once you are old enough, it's good. Very, very good. Theme song has been gratefully provided to us with permission by The Beards. You can find them at www.thebeards.com.au. They're currently in the middle of their 10-long-year beard tour at the moment. Head along the website, find the tour dates and the ticketing information, everything like that. Until next week, ladies and gentlemen, you stay bearded, you stay beautiful. I'm Drunkle Dan, you're the lovely audience. And remember, nothing in life is that fucking serious, so just relax.
Go ahead and touch me in the beard. I want you to hold it, stroke it, put your hand inside and say goodbye to all your fears. Just close your eyes and touch me in the beard.
Flow. Don't be scared, just let it all go. This is the moment dreams come true. So do I want to